I'd like to welcome you to the post-public meeting media teleconference. Today's teleconference is to provide an opportunity for folks to ask questions about today's proceedings of both Mr. Dick Covey, co-chairman of the Return to Flight Task Group, and Colonel Jim Adamson, who is the task group's operations panel lead. We have a limited time today, and so we're probably going to only have an opportunity to get through everybody one time. I'm going to ask you to limit to a single question and follow up. I really doubt that with the number of folks on that we're going to be able to get around a second time due to some conflicts in schedule. What we'll do is I will, after we have our opening remarks, I will go ahead and call on you by name and affiliation, which relieves you of having to do that, but also will hopefully facilitate us getting through the list and making sure everybody has an opportunity to ask your questions. One more time, if you would mute your microphones when you're not speaking. Those of you who've already muted don't have to do it again with the star six, but star six will mute and star six will also unmute. And with that, I will turn it over to Mr. Covey for opening remarks.
Thank you, Dave. Well, good afternoon. Today marked another milestone in the activities of the Return to Flight Task Group. With the actions at the plenary session today, the task group now has basically completed assessment on the actions that NASA has taken relative to five of the 15 CABE recommendations that were designated as return to flight. In all cases, for those five now, we have determined that the actions of the agency have met the intent of the CABE recommendations, and also in all five of those, we have closed them conditionally. Basically, there's planned work that we want to continue our vigilance on and make sure that we understand when that planned work is completed and it was done successfully. But the plans and the actions are in place and they're all things that are achievable within the normal work of the program as they proceed on to return to flight. We still have a lot of work ahead of us relative to dispositioning the agency's actions relative to the remaining 10 return to flight recommendations and space shuttle program action number 3, which we have also taken on and determined that we would complete an assessment on before we finish our work. We have gone to the process of using telecons to be able to disposition those assessments that we believe are can be done in that mode. Because to remind you, the Return to Flight Task Group is a part-time task for the members, and it is not convenient nor practical for us to get together. Get 20-some-odd people together on a recurring basis, nor is it necessary because we believe that with the fact-finding being accomplished by our individual panels, being operations, engineering, and management, that they are the ones that get together face-to-face, do the fact-finding, and then at the appropriate time with the documentation from NASA, then bring closure packages forward to the entire task group. We thought about this long and hard and worked into a process of how we would do this today. I think it went well. I was pleased with the way it went and the support we got from our staff in preparing that. I would hope that today we would use this time to clarify questions you may have relative to our proceedings today. That would be the intent of this press conference, so that would hopefully is the way we'll focus things. With that, I'm going to turn it over to Jim Adamson for any opening comments he may have specifically relative to the assessments that were brought forward today.
Thank you, Dick. The only thing I really have to say is that the ops panel has worked for the last 6 or 8 months together with NASA, kind of riding side saddle, I think, for the benefit of clarify once again that NASA's responsible for responding to the CABE recommendations that we're tracking and verifying, and so therefore they really develop the requirements and define the scope of their activities as they deem appropriate to satisfy the intent of the CABE, and we sort of ride side saddle on them and ask them for information and peer over their shoulders as they go along. We try to do our work as much in parallel as possible and try not to be too intrusive. NASA's got a tremendous burden and a task to accomplish all of these things before we return to flight, as everyone knows, and a very tough schedule to make. So we're trying to do our work in as invisible a way as we can. These two recommendations kind of represent new territory for us because, as Dick pointed out, we tried to close these telephonically, and of course, everyone knows that when you can't wave your arms, it's harder to communicate. So here we all are on the phone, not able to wave our arms, or at least we can wave our arms, but you can't see us wave our arms. So we have to say what we mean and mean what we say. And to that end, today we ran into an interesting little thing where the ops panel recommended unconditional closure, and the task group as a whole decided that it would be better to close these conditionally. And that was really more of an administrative thing than anything else. We in the ops panel felt that that NASA had completed everything to satisfy us that they had met the intent of the CABE, while there remains to be done some planned work that NASA has scheduled going forward. The task group as a whole decided that for administrative accounting purposes, it would be more rigorous for us to make that conditional closure pending completion of work or satisfaction that NASA has completed that work, and we agreed with that. It's an administrative detail, but it's one that I think, in retrospect, makes a lot of sense. So with that, Dick, I'm going to just say most of the folks on the line today were at the meeting or heard the meeting, I think, and I'm ready to respond to questions.
Okay, thank you. This is Dave, and what we will what we'll do is I'll ask you to address your question to either Dick or Jim so that we can identify who you're asking your question of. If you don't care, then just indicate that. And like I said, I'll call you by name. We'll probably have time for just one time through one question and a follow-up, and we'll begin with Tracy Watson. Tracy?
Sorry, I had to unmute my phone. I just wanted to ask Mr. Cubby, I guess, what do you think about the idea of not flying the boom on the first post-Columbia flight? That's something that NASA is apparently considering.
Leslie, we have been kept apprised of many of the considerations that the agency's making relative to meeting the intent of some of the CABE recommendations, particularly the one that you're referring to, which has to do with inspection and repair of the thermal protection system. And we're aware that the boom, as we have said and told y'all earlier in the year when we put our report out, that the boom development, since it is a development effort, we consider to be one of the things that is most challenging for the agency. Don't think they've thrown in a towel on it yet. We are aware that they have looked and are looking at alternative ways of completing the inspection and repairs that would be necessary or provide that capability for the first flights. And the issue will get into how much that costs them from the standpoint of their mission capability to fly without the boom or to wait until a boom is ready. They'll have to make that decision. We'll look at their response and weigh that against the intent of the CAPES, the recommendations, and complete our assessment at that time.
So do you think it's possible for them to fly without the boom and meet the CAPES recommendations?
I don't think we've seen all of the data on that, but it appears that it's highly likely they could meet the intent of the CAPE recommendation without the boom. Again, it depends upon the implementation and what they're going to do as an alternative.
Okay, thank you, Tracy. Brad Liston?
No questions right now, thank you.
Okay, Dave Santucci, CNN.
Hi, yes, a question for Mr. Covey. You've closed out 5 now conditionally. You've got 10 remaining. Which of those 10 do you see presenting the biggest problem, biggest challenge?
Well, you know, there's probably a couple of different ways of looking at that, Dave. I think that clearly the technically challenging recommendations for the agency are the ones that we continue to watch. And those three are elimination of debris liberation from the external tank, inspection and repair, and both aspects of that, inspection and repair. So those three things are the ones that are most technically challenging for the agency. Those are the ones that we'll continue to monitor the progress and actions on. The other part of that is the approaches that the agency's taking in those areas clearly intend to meet what the CABE had asked them to do, but there is some latitude in the recommendations of the CABE, and so it's a matter of how far beyond the or how much you move within the latitude that the CABE allowed in the recommendations, particularly as it applies to inspection and repair.
And just as a follow-up, conversely to that, is there a recommendation that you're on the verge of closing out?
Let's see. We believe that we have two closure packages that have actually been brought forward to us by the Space Shuttle Program and the Space Flight Leadership Council. It's our intent to have another teleconference in about a month, and we will address those two at this time. Right now, I don't have my notes to tell me which two those were.
Thank you.
Bill Harwood.
Hi, it's Bill Harwood, CBS. I'll address this one to Jim Adamson if I could. Two questions. One is, since you guys are focused on the intent of the CABE, and NASA's talking about possibly flying without the boom, they're giving up on the overwrap for large holes in the wing, and they're settling for something smaller than that. And then the whole idea of safe haven, and when you look at safe haven in the context of a 2010 retirement date on the shuttle, I don't see how they can do that. Maintain backup orbiters and the ability to get off the pad quick enough to actually accomplish safe haven. So just philosophically, I realize you guys hadn't made any decisions about this, but philosophically, how do you assess the importance of, A, the boom or ability to repair versus having, you know, a long period of safe haven as an alternative? Because it isn't adding up to me.
Hi, Bill. It's good to hear from you again. You rightfully have couched your question in the context of a network of interrelated activities that all have to play together, in my mind at least, to satisfy the intent of the CABE. This whole idea of critical debris size, a critical piece of debris being shed off the tank and then impacting or not impacting the orbiter, our ability to detect it and inspect the orbiter for possible damage and then to repair. And then if we can't repair, what do we do in terms of safe haven? All of these activities are related to each other. And the boom, like the overwrap, are just tools or things that NASA has thought up in an effort to fill a particular niche in that whole puzzle. So as we do our work of observing NASA and watching how they respond to the CABE intent, we're sort of following along as they evolve their thought process, and hopefully in the end these pieces will fit together. Now, do I believe that the boom is necessary as an example necessary as an inspection tool? Well, if NASA can inspect the orbiter by looking either visually or optically at the orbiter and detect a critical damaged site without the boom, then I don't believe it's necessary. Can they do that with what they now have? I don't know. They've got a whole suite of cameras that they're adding. They're using visual inspection with optics, and they're recording photography. So I think that NASA will decide for themselves whether or not it satisfies the intent of the CABE if they can inspect the vehicle through other means and not fly the boom. Once they make that decision, they'll hand that package over to us, and we'll assess it to see whether we believe that it meets the intent of CABE or not. Similarly, with Safe Haven, obviously, if space station and the shuttle, potentially stranded shuttle, can't supply the resources required by the crew until a rescue vehicle can get there, then it's not really a safe haven. So some combination of getting the vehicle there fast and or responding quickly to that kind of a contingency and supplying the crew is it's necessary to match those two things up. Now, NASA, I know, is working on that. I can't tell you that they're there today, and I can't tell you that how much of a gap there is. I think that's a work in progress, and we'll all have to wait to see whether or not they satisfy it or not. So,
go ahead.
You are right, Bill. This is a very challenging problem, and NASA is really working hard on this. As we stand here today, I cannot say, honestly, that they have already established a way to meet the intention of the CABE when it comes to inspecting and repairing in that whole scenario. I'm confident, though, that NASA will meet the intent of the CABE before we go fly again. And that's about all I can say about it.
Let me just ask one follow-up. Not really a follow-up, but since we're only getting two questions, it's a different question. Looking at the 2010 date that the president laid out, I realize that everybody in the space business goes, well, you know, that's arbitrary and it's whatever, but you know how the president works and administrations work. That date kind of gets etched in stone. Do you have any concern that 2010 puts some schedule pressure on NASA in the sense of being able to fulfill Safe Haven, for example, if you've got to get all these flights up and finish the station by 2010? I mean, it almost seems like it's getting that way. I just wonder what your thoughts were.
Well, I think, Bill, if you held to the date, it would present a lot of schedule pressure. But I think what NASA is going to do, and I would certainly hope that they would take this position, is that if they can accomplish what they are expected to accomplish in that period of time safely, that they will tell the president and the country that they can't do it in that time, and they'll take more time. In a case like this, when we're flying space and we're requiring safety to be a number one priority, we've got to let schedule slip because you can't hold all those variables constant.
Okay.
Hey,
Warren Lear.
Let me add something because I think Bill needs to probably ask the NASA folks what their intent is relative to launch on need, because I think they made it pretty clear, at least to us at this point, that they don't look at that as a program-long capability, that right now it's only to a potential for a first two flights. So the issues you're talking about relative to how do you make all that work, they've recognized that, and so the use of launch on need is currently in their planning is limited.
I understand that, Dick. Thanks.
Warren Leary.
Yes, for Mr. Covey. Just for some of us who didn't hear all the meeting this morning, could you sum up, in layman's terms, the two recommendations that you cleared today are definitively cleared? And then also I'll quickly sum up the other three so we have just kind of a quick, concise, where are we with these five?
Well, let's see. I'm going to refer you to our two press conferences and our report that we had on the first three, because that's pretty well documented. And I'm going to let Jim respond to your summary on the two that we dispositioned today.
Okay. We reviewed two of the 15 recommendations that the task group is following, that NASA is required to respond to prior to return to flight. The first one is foreign object damage or debris, and its number is 4.2-5. As most of you know, I think FOD, F-O-D, is an acronym that is used interchangeably for foreign object debris and foreign object damage. It's actually anything in a flight type environment, or space flight, or aviation environment that could cause damage. Pieces of litter or garbage or metal filings in the wrong place, or in some cases it could be covers from equipment or anything, tools that are not supposed to be there, anything that could potentially cause damage, or it could be the damage itself, depending on how the word term is used. At the Kennedy Space Center during processing, the CABE found that in an effort to document where the FOD was coming from, they changed the definition of FOD, and they actually subdivided it into smaller parts. And one of those things was called processing debris, and the other was called FOD. Well, that wasn't the same as the industry standard definition. They did it in an effort to try to identify where the stuff was coming from. The commission, the Columbia Investigation Board, found that after talking to some of the employees down there in the workforce, that was a confusing point, and they felt that as a matter of safety and hazard reporting, that NASA should return to an industry standard definition at KSC, and that the workforce should be trained in what that definition is. That was one of the recommendations, and NASA has completed their work on that, is in the process of completing the training for the workforce, has gone back to the industry standard definition, and in addition to that, has raised the bar activities. They've gone out to industry and benchmarked some of the best practices for definitions and implementation of FOD elimination. So having done all that, we found that NASA's work satisfied the intent of the CABE, and we presented that one for closure to the task group today. The task group decided not to close it unconditionally. They decided to close it with the condition that when NASA, as part of NASA's forward work, is to audit this process in October, that once NASA has completed the audit and presented the findings satisfactorily to the task group, that we will close the recommendation. So that one was recommended for conditional closure pending completion of the audit by NASA. The second one we reviewed was digital closeout photography. The CABE found that that during the Columbia accident, it was necessary to refer to photographs of the inside structure, location of sensors and wiring harnesses in the process of troubleshooting to augment drawings which did not in all cases reflect the actual flown configuration of the vehicle. There's a process in the space shuttle program called material review boards. When the orbiter in the process of flying is returned to spec or cannot be returned to the specification, it goes through an approval process called a material review board, which approves the safety of modifications to the vehicle. It would be like hammering out a dent in the fender of your car. It's not the same as it was originally, but it satisfies the functionality requirements when you get some body work done on your car. That would be similar to what the orbiter goes through when it does a material review board. Well, in some of those cases, it modifies the way things are situated in the orbiter that are not consistent with the drawings. In those cases, on the part of critical subsystems, the CABE wanted to see closeout photography before the area was covered up, which represented the way the vehicle actually appeared. Now, these closeout photographs do not replace the drawings, because the drawing, of course, as you all know, tells the engineer what the functionality of the system is. These drawings do not talk to the functionality of the system. What they do is they give the engineer a visual description of how the system looks in the vehicle. And the problem that the CABE found with the way NASA's database was working is that it was very hard to use, cumbersome, and users could not get to the photographs quickly. So they made a recommendation that that NASA develop an interim program of closeout photographs for all critical subsystems that differ from engineering drawings, and that those digitized closeout photographs be made immediately available for engineers to troubleshoot during on-orbit activities and operations. So NASA went back and improved a database that they'd already had in place and put a new front end on it so that it was user friendly and the photographs were easily accessible. Then they went back to the program and got all of the new requirements as indicated by the CABE to satisfy the intent of the recommendation, and are in the process of adding those photographs to the database. They have tested this database and tried it with users who are not experts in shuttle topography, and they have found that the users have no trouble at all using this database and accessing the photographs. There still is a simulation to demonstrate the use of this in an integrated fashion in the control center. That simulation is coming up this fall, and so we recommended closing this action. NASA has satisfied the intent of the CABE recommendation and will have met all of the requirements upon completion of this demonstration at this simulation. So that was the second one that we presented today.
Hey, Warren, just to help you on the other part of your question, the three that were closed previously were 3.3-1, which was reinforced carbon-carbon non-destructive inspection, 4.2-3, closeout inspection, and 6.3-2, NEMA Memorandum of Agreement.
And Warren, the audio from both the public meeting in which those were closed conditionally and the press conference that followed that are available on returntoflight.org. So if you need some additional information on that, you can get that there. And did you have a follow-up?
No, that's fine.
Okay.